No Name by Wilkie Collins, dramatized by Ray Jenkins, with Sophie Thompson as Magdalene Vanston, Jack May as Captain Ragg, and Vivian Pickles as Mrs. Ragg. Episode 2, July 1846. Magdalene and Nora Vanston, having been orphaned by the sudden deaths of their father and mother, are revealed to be illegitimate, and by the law of the time, thereby disinherited.
Miss Garth, we must look facts squarely in the face. The law leaves Mr. Vanston's daughters at their uncle's mercy. They are nobody's children.
It's a cruel law, Mr. Pendrell, in a Christian country.
As it affects illegitimate offspring, the law is a disgrace to the nation. In less than an hour, I shall be on my way back to London. Immediately on my arrival, I will find the speediest means of communicating with Mr. Michael Vanston, and I will let you know the result. We must not lose hope.
Hope? From Michael Vanston?
Oh, it may help you in breaking the hard truth if Nora and Magdalene can see how their father refers to them in his will, and if they read his last letter to me. The one idea in his life was to make atonement to them. He writes, "They may think bitterly of their birth, but they shall never think bitterly of me. I will cross them in nothing. They shall never know a sorrow that I can spare them, or a want which I will not satisfy. I leave the will and the letter to help you. I give them both into your care."
Oh, God, help me. What am I to do? How am I to tell them?
There's no need.
Magdalene!
They know already. Mr. Vanstone's daughters are nobody's children, and the law leaves them helpless at their uncle's mercy.
You heard us.
Under the window from the beginning to end.
I thought it... you were the wind.
Don't look at me with those doubting eyes. What wrong have I done? In fact, I've saved you the distress of having to speak to us. You've suffered enough for us already. Oh. It's time we learnt to suffer for ourselves. I have, and Nora's beginning.
You told her, yes.
Please give me our legacy. The will and the letter. I mean to read them.
Magdalene, you frighten me.
Oh, try not to think worse of me than I deserve. Oh, I can't cry yet. My heart is numbed.
Bad news, ladies. I'm an enemy to all unnecessary suspense. Bad news.
Please be seated, Mr. Clare.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Pendrell.
Thank you. I'm grieved to say, Miss Garth, that your doubts when I last saw you were better founded than my hopes. I have never met with a man so utterly dead to every consideration of mercy as Michael Vanston.
He takes the whole of his brother's fortune and makes no provision?
Absolutely nothing. When I wrote to him in the first instance, I put before him plainly and earnestly every one of the circumstances under which he has become possessor of his brother's fortune. He referred me to his written instructions, lodged with a lawyer in London. Having read them, I declined to take the decision as final and attempted to see his son, Mr. Noel Vanston, who is in London seeking medical treatment. But he was too fatigued to receive me. So I wrote a second time to Michael Vanston. His answer declared the original instructions to be final and declined any further correspondence with me. There is the beginning and the end of the negotiation. I'm sorry.
I speak for my sister as well as myself. We have tried to restrain ourselves from hoping too confidently, but we are deeply grateful for your kindness.
You have a copy with you of my uncle's written orders?
Yes.
May I see it?
Now, pray oblige me by not
pressing your request. Why should you agitate yourself?
I am sensible to your kindness, sir, but I can bear pain. This decision is more serious to me for private reasons than it is to my sister. He has robbed us deliberately, and I think we have a right if we wish to know why.
You've relieved your conscience, Pendril. Give her the right she claims. It is her right if she will have...
Is this the place which refers to us?
Yes.
Decide, Nora. Shall I read this out loud or to myself?
To yourself.
As you wish. I understand that my late brother left two illegitimate children, both of them of an age to earn their own living. Various irregular considerations have been urged in respect of these persons by their solicitor. Be so good as to tell him I wish the persons concerned to know, once and for all, that I receive the money not only as my right, but also as a proper compensation for the injustice which I suffered from my father, and a proper penalty paid by my younger brother for the vile intrigue by which he succeeded in disinheriting me. His conduct when a young man was uniformly discreditable and continued to be so. He appears to have systematically imposed a woman on society as his wife, who was not his wife, and to have completed the outrage on morality by afterwards marrying her. Such conduct has called down a judgment upon himself and his children. I will not invite retribution on my own head by associating with them. Let them, as becomes their birth, gain their bread by situations. They show themselves disposed to accept their proper status. I will assist them to start virtuously in life by a present of £100 each. On the express understanding that the transaction so completed is the beginning and end of my connection with them. May I ask one more favour?
Please.
Magdalene.
I will keep my promise. Did Mr. Michael Vanstone know that my father's great anxiety was to make sure of providing for my sister and myself?
He knew it in your father's own words. I sent him an extract from his last letter.
Where he said he should not rest in his grave if he left us with no name.
That letter and those words.
I want to fasten it all in my mind. I'm obliged to you, sir.
And I'm sorry to press business matters when you are necessarily unfitted to deal with them, but I must take my instructions back tonight. With reference to the disgraceful pecuniary offer...
Tell him if I was starving by the roadside, I wouldn't touch a farthing of it.
Yes. Is he an old man?
He's 75 or 76 years of age.
You spoke of a son a little while since. Are there any other children?
None.
Do you know anything of his wife?
She has been dead for many years.
Why do you ask?
I beg your pardon. I won't ask any more.
Now, the servants. I will give them the necessary instructions before I leave. The house, carriages, horse, furniture, plate, and so on await Mr. Vanstone's further orders. But any personal possessions, jewellery, presents are entirely at your disposal. Departure.
The house. Everything belongs to him.
Yes.
Then I'm ready to leave tomorrow.
Oh, I can safely assure you that a week hence will be time enough. Now, have you thought of any possible place of residence?
When they leave this house, they leave it with me. My house is their house, and my bread is theirs. In my younger days, I was associated in teaching with my elder sister. We established a school in London, which grew to be large and prosperous, and I propose that we go back there directly. Come, Nora.
Yes, we must see to the servants.
Thank you, Miss Garth. I shall be communicating with you very shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Pendril. It has been a dreadful...
How old are you?
18.
You've shown remarkable courage for one so young. Have you got any left.
I can't give Frank up. Don't ask me to. You don't care for me, I know, but you loved my father. Be kind to me for his sake. I won't give him up. No, not if a million fathers ask me.
I'm one, and I don't ask you.
Oh.
Now, hug Frank, not me. I haven't done with you yet, and when I have, you may shake hands. Now, compose yourself. I don't ask you to give the everlasting obstacle up, but to wait.
Oh, I will.
Will you make Frank wait?
Patiently, willingly.
Will you send him to China? I don't pretend to enter into your feelings for Frank or his for you. The subject doesn't interest me. But I do state two plain truths. One, you can't be married till you have money enough to pay for the roof that shelters you, the clothes that cover you, and the victuals you eat. And two, you can't find the money. I can't. And Frank's only chance in finding it is going to China. If I tell him to go, he'll say yes, slip off in the pilot's boat and sneak back secretly to you. That's his disposition.
No, it's his love for me.
Well, call it what you like. He's too slippery for my fingers to hold him. My shutting the door won't keep him from coming back. You shutting it will. Have you the courage? You fond enough of him not to stand in his light?
I would die for him.
Will you send him to China?
Have a little pity on me. I've lost my family, and now I am to lose Frank. I don't say it's not in his interests to send him away. I only say it's hard, very, very hard on me.
Now, that I don't deny, but it's nonetheless true that the fortune you were to have brought him has changed hands.
It may change again.
What does that mean?
Oh, nothing. Only my own thoughts. He shall go. I can suffer for Frank's sake. He shall never marry me till I can be what my father said I should be, the making of his future. He shall take no burden when he takes me. I'll be the good angel in his life.
I'll help you. The rain stopped. And we shake hands. There.
Suppose there should be some change for the better. Suppose I could come to Frank, as my father said, before the 5 years are out.
If it gives you courage, hope on. If this impossible good fortune of yours ever happens, my dear, tell me, and Frank shall come back.
In the meantime, you have my promise. Oh, Frank. Is it all over? Does Frank go to China?
Be careful how you manage that sister of yours. She's one great misfortune to contend with. She's not made for the ordinary jog-trot of a woman's life. I don't say I can see straight to the end of the good or evil in her. I only warn you, her future will be no common one.
Westmoreland House, Kensington, August the 14th, 1846. Dear Mr. Pendrell, we have left Combe Raven. Oh, what a cruel last night it was. No moon, no stars, such deep stillness. The sense of loneliness quite overpowered me. You will say at 26 I'm old enough to have controlled myself, but I stole into Magdalene's room, just as when we were children. She was sitting with her writing materials before her, thinking.
Lie down. I'll soon follow.
It was daylight when I woke, and she was still in her chair.
I'll sleep when we've left here. I'll be better when it's all over and I've bid Frank goodbye. You'd better take Father's will and the letter. I've made copies of all he says of us in them. That's all I want for the future.
Magdalene is very unaccountable to those who don't know her intimately. I can't help telling the smallest things about her, which may, in my judgment, end in making you think of her as I do, as possessing a noble nature. We were all surprised to find a strange letter on the breakfast table, addressed to Miss Garth from Captain Wragg. He expresses as much sympathy on his discovery of our affliction in the newspaper as if he'd been really intimate with us, and he begs to know, thus revealing total ignorance of all that has actually happened, whether it is thought desirable that he should be present at the reading of the will. The weather being showery, we arranged that Francis Clare should meet Magdalene in the morning room. At the end of half an hour, I came downstairs.
It isn't fair. Keep changing your mind.
Please,
why are things changing this way?
My love.
One minute you love me, and the next.
I don't want to
die.
Leave me.
Out! Leave!
May I ask the reason for this extraordinary violence?
No. Be good enough to imagine it for yourself and leave us immediately.
What have I done?
I can enter into no discussion with you. I only request you to leave us.
In this business, all the sacrifices have fallen to my share. I'm the only one who has any heart. All the rest of you are as hard as stones, Magdalene included.
Please leave.
In one breath she says she loves me. The next she tells me to go to China. What have I done to be treated?
Will you please leave?
I only want to stay at home. What's the consequence? You're all against me.
This was all that passed between us. If he gives any other account, what he says will be false. Mr. Clare told Miss Garth later he would take the necessary measures with your assistance to see him safely on board his vessel when the time came. When I spoke angrily to Magdalene of his conduct, she refused to listen and laid all the blame for the dreadful state in which I had found her entirely on herself. Am I wrong in telling you she has a noble nature? If you had seen how she suffered on our last visit to the grave, you would never doubt her again. I had to take her from the place almost by force. Then she broke free, ran back and tore up a handful of grass in a frenzy, and said something to herself. I felt terrified at the sight of her. Then the paroxysm left her as swiftly as it had come. She thrust the grass into her bosom, took my arm, and hurried me out.
What did you say to yourself?
A promise to our dead father.
Westmoreland House, Kensington, 23rd September, 1846. My dear Mr. Pendrell, I would come and speak to you personally, but I dare not leave Nora. Magdalene has deserted us. This morning her room was empty and a note in her handwriting left for Nora. I send you the enclosed copy.
My darling, try to forgive me. I can bear it no longer. I must go. If you knew what my thoughts are, if you knew how hard I have fought against them and how horribly they have gone on haunting me in the lonely quiet of this house, you would pity and forgive me. I dare not show myself to you as I really am. Pray don't send and seek after me. I will write and relieve all your anxieties. I have only gone to get my living in the manner which is fittest for me. Whether I succeed or fail, I can do myself no harm. I have no name to degrade. Farewell, my darling. Take 1,000 kisses from me, my own best, dearest love, till we meet again. Magdalene.
I have reasons for feeling she's gone away with the intention of trying her future on the stage. She has in her possession the card of an actor who superintended an amateur theatrical performance at Clifton, in which she took part. I saw the card and I know his name to be Huxtable. The address, I'm almost sure, was at some theatrical place in Bow Street, Covent Garden. One more word, and I have done. You remember her deep shame and anger at now being regarded in law as having no name. Whatever natural reluctance she might otherwise have had to deceiving us and degrading herself by using an assumed name, I presume is henceforth removed. We must try and discover her by personal description. We can trace her in no other way. For God's sake, let no expense and no effort be spared. My only hope of quieting Nora is to show her a word of encouragement from your pen.
Sergeant Bulmer?
We traced the young lady, sir, to the theatrical agents in Bow Street. We know, sir, on her producing Mr. Huxtable's card, the agent wrote his address down for her, and she ordered a cab to drive her to the Great Northern Terminus. We believe she left by the 9 o'clock train, and we followed her by the 12 o'clock.
And?
I've ascertained, sir, she called at 2:30 at Mr. Huxtable's lodgings in York. Found he was out and not expected back till 8 in the evening. She left, said she'd call again, and never came back. Mr. Huxtable's statement is that he and the young lady have never set eyes on each other.
Do you believe him? He's an actor.
Well, to best of my knowledge, he's a perfectly honest man, sir.
The young lady sets out with a certain object before her. Instead of going on to the accomplishment of that object, she stops short. Why has she stopped? And where?
That, sir, is the itch in the case.
Then what next?
Well, I've left one of my men in daily communication with the authorities, sir. I've also taken care to have the handbills of her widely circulated, and I've completed the necessary arrangements for seeing that the playbills of all country theatres and companies well looked after. Yeah, luckily for us, sir, theatres are in a bad way. Except in the large cities, hardly one of them is open, sir, so we can keep an eye on the rest with little expense, sir. I don't by any means despair of finding our young lady, bringing her back to her friends safe and well, sir.
I think I have the honour of addressing the younger Miss Vanstone. Deeply gratified, I'm sure, for more reasons than one.
You are mistaken.
Pardon me, I am a species of relative. I had the pleasure of seeing you in the spring of the present year. I presented myself on that memorable occasion to an honoured preceptress of your late father's family. Permit me, under equally agreeable circumstances, to present myself to you. My name is Ragg, W-R-A-G-G-E, Ragg.
I remember your name. Excuse me, I have an engagement.
Not in that direction, Miss Vanstone, I beg and entreat. That is the way leading to Mr. Huxtable's, H-U-X, Hux.
What do you know about him?
This is a handbill. There is just enough light left for young and lovely eyes to read by. Allow me. £50 reward. Left her home in London early on the morning of September the 23rd, 1846. A young lady, age 18. Dress, deep mourning. Personal appearance, hair light brown. Eyes, light grey. Complexion, strikingly pale. Tall, upright figure, walks with remarkable grace and ease, speaks with openness and resolution. Personal marks, 2 little moles, close together on the left side of the neck. Mark on the underclothing, Magdalene Vanstone.
Oh, Nora! After the letter I wrote you, Nora! Nora!
How is Nora?
Is the mark of my neck described all over York?
At present, I have every reason to believe we have just perused the only copy in circulation. Ah! Torn! And to the wind over the walls! Bravo! The family spirit, Miss Vanstone. We all inherit our hot blood from my maternal grandmother.
How did you come by it?
My dear creature, I've just told you from my maternal...
The handbill!
I beg 10,000 pardons. Briefly, When it is one of one's regular habits to glean the human field, Miss Vanstone, one is more or less fond of haunting large railway stations. I was there today to observe the arrival of the train from London at 6:20. A sudden parting of the crowd near the second-class carriages, I push in. A decently dressed man, assisted by porter and policeman, is attempting to rescue printed handbills. Observing £50 reward, I offer to assist. I secrete a copy and follow the gentleman to the ferry at the North Street Postern. There I read the handbill, almost betraying myself with a loud exclamation of surprise at your name therein. I now devotedly follow the man. He enters a street, stops at a house, and rings the bell. I, in turn, go to the next house, affect to ring the bell, but in effect, listen.
Does Mr. Huxtable live here? Is he at home?
No. He'll be back at 8.
I think a young lady called here early in the day.
Yes.
Did she see Mr. Huxtable?
No. Said she'd come back at 8.
Well, I'll call and see Mr. Huxtable at the same hour.
Any name?
No. Say a gentleman called on theatrical business. That will be enough.
I no longer follow him. This is a family matter. How was a young lady in your critical position, my dear, likely to while away the hours until Mr. Huxtable's return? Visit the minster? Pass the hour. Waiting room at the station? Too risky. In a pastry cook's, perhaps. But a lovely autumn evening, a light breeze, must be out of doors, but somewhere quiet. What is the quietest place in York? The place every stranger goes to see. The Walk on the Walls. And here, my dear, lamplit you are.
Go on.
Shocked to disappoint you, I'm sure. But the fact is, I have done.
The end. You mean to earn the £50 reward.
Ah, smart! Some men might take it seriously. I'm not easily offended. Try again. It occurs to me, you might have spoken in earnest. My poor child, how can I earn the £50 before the reward is offered me or the handbills publicly posted? Precious as you are to all your relatives, myself included, take my word for it, the lawyers managing this case will not pay £50 for you if they can possibly help it. Are you still persuaded my needy pockets are gaping for the money? Very good. There is a train to London at 9:45 tonight. Submit yourself to your friend's wishes and go back by it.
Never. That vile handbill has decided me. Oh, I forgive Nora, but not Mr. Pendrell and not Miss Garth.
If you are to be your own mistress much longer, you must take some course of action before 8:00. Mr. Huxtable is out of the question.
For tonight. But what stops me from writing to him and making my own private arrangements for tomorrow?
To get to tomorrow, you must first pass through tonight. Where are you to sleep?
There are no hotels in York.
For large families, for single gentlemen, excellent ones. The very worst places in the world for beautiful young ladies who present themselves without male escort or maid in attendance and without a single article of luggage.
My luggage is at the cloakroom.
Think. Pray think. Do you really suppose that the people who are looking for you haven't an eye on the terminus? We are within 5 minutes of my present address. Allow me to offer. No? You distrust me. Good heavens, is it possible you've heard anything to my disadvantage?
That you are a rogue.
What is Mr. Huxtable?
A respectable man.
Very good. What do you think a respectable man is likely to do with a young lady who openly acknowledges that she's run away from her home to go on the stage? My dear girl, On your own showing, it's not a respectable man you want. It's a rogue like me.
You're quite right. Nobody's child must sleep under somebody's roof. And why not yours? What must be, must be.
This way, Miss Danston. My niece on a visit to York. She has kindly consented to occupy your empty bedroom, ma'am. Consider it let, if you please. You may lend me your candle. My dear girl, Mrs. Rag's boudoir is on the first floor. Allow me to show you the way up.
Thank you.
Miss?
Yes?
I hope you'll pay me, miss. Your uncle doesn't.
Oh.
Come, my dear. Mrs. Rag! Mrs. Rag!
A female figure with faded blue eyes slowly rose. When she had at last attained an upright position, she towered to a stature of 2 or 3 inches over 6 feet. Giants of both sexes are, by a wise dispensation of Providence, created for the most part gentle. If Mrs. Rag and a lamb had been placed side by side, comparison under those circumstances would have exposed the lamb as a rank impostor.
Tea, Captain?
Miss Danston the younger, our fair relative whom I have met by fortunate accident, our guest for the night.
Oh?
Our guest.
Oh, please, miss, will you sit down? I'm sorry. No, I don't mean I'm sorry. I mean, I'm glad.
Glad, of course.
Glad, of course.
Mrs. Rag?
Mrs. Rag isn't deaf. She's a little slow, constitutionally torpid. I am merely loud with her as a necessary stimulant to her ideas. Mrs. Rag! Oh,
tea, Captain!
Put your cap straight.
Oh.
I beg 10,000 pardons. The sad truth is, I am a martyr to my sense of order. All untidiness, all want of system causes me the acutest irritation. Externally speaking, Mrs. Rag is, to my infinite regret, the crookedest woman I have ever met with. More to the right.
Do you like dress, miss?
I do.
Oh, yes.
Show Miss Vanston the spare room on the third floor front. She has no luggage. Supply the deficiency and then come back.
It's buzzing again more than ever.
This isn't the third floor.
Oh, wait a bit, miss. Before we go up higher, till I'm a little better again.
Shall I ask for help?
Oh, bless you, I don't want help. I'm used to it. I've had the buzzing off and on. How many years? Have you ever been at Darch's dining rooms in London?
No.
Well, that's where the buzzing started. I waited on the gentlemen. They all came together, and the gentlemen all gave their orders together.
Oh, and you had to keep all their orders in your memory.
Oh, boiled pork and greens and peace pudding number one. Number two, stewed beef and carrots and goosegob tart. Cut of mutton and quick about it. Well done and plenty of fat number three. Codfish and parsnips. 2 chops to follow, hot. Hot or I'll be the death of you. 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 and 10, stout for the one and ale for t'other. Matilda? Tilda? Tilda, 50 times over. Oh, Lord, this gentleman wants cheese. This one doesn't. All buzzing in my poor head like 40,000 million bees. Oh, don't tell the captain. Don't tell.
Shh, he hasn't heard you. There, let me cool your head now. There.
What a pretty hand you got. I try to be a lady. Always keep gloves on. I'm nicely dressed, though, ain't I? I like dress. You won't be angry with me.
No.
I should like to try your bonnet on.
There.
Oh.
Try it.
Oh, I had one pretty as this once, only it was white, not black. I wore it when the captain married me.
Where did you meet with him?
Oh, the dining rooms. I made more mistakes with him than I did with all the rest of them put together.
He used to swear. Didn't he used to swear? When he left off swearing, he married me. Bless you. I had my pick. I had my trifle of money. I picked the littlest. I picked the captain. He took care of me and my money. I'm here. The money's gone. Don't put that doubt out on the table. He won't have that. Don't move his razors. Don't, please, or I shall forget which is which.
Mrs. Ryan.
Oh, my book. I've lost my art of cooking. What did he tell me to do?
Mrs. Ryan.
Oh, lots of things. I forgot.
Say you've done them. They were for me. Things I don't want. Here's your book. Go down and say I'm coming directly.
Coming directly. Yes. I'm coming directly.
Oh, Mrs. Ware. My bonnet.
Oh.
Soon as ever I start that art of cooking, my buzzing starts.
Down at heel again. The right shoe. Pull it up at heel, Mrs. Rag.
Oh.
Honor the York butter, my dear girl. Test the freshness of a new and neighboring egg. I offer my little all. A pauper's meal seasoned with a gentleman's welcome. Ah, very pleasant. I feel quite in the bosom of my family. Now, who and what am I?
A rogue.
No, a swindler. Definition, a moral agriculturist, a man who cultivates the feel of human sympathy. Shall I continue to put my profession frankly?
Yes, and I'll tell you after, frankly, what I think of it.
Here I am. A needy object. Is it or is it not the duty of a Christian community to help the needy? If you say no, you shock me. If you say yes, why am I to blame for making it do its duty? What, your pockets are full and mine are empty and you refuse to help me? Sordid wretch. Do you think I will allow you to violate the sacred obligations of charity on my person? I say distinctly, I won't. Those are my principles as a moral agriculturist. Admitting of trickery, certainly. But am I to blame if the feel of human sympathy can't be cultivated in any other way? Consult my brothers in the mere farming line. Do they get their crops for the asking? No, they must circumvent arid nature, exactly as I do sordid man. They must plough and sow, top dress and bottom dress, surface drain and the rest of it. Then why am I to be checked in the vast occupation of deep draining mankind? Infamous!
Is the Yorkshire crop a particularly rich one at the present?
A hit. A palpable hit. Oh, sit straight, Mrs. Rag. More to the left. More still. That'll do. My dear girl, here or elsewhere, the crop never fails. But one can't always gather it in. After years of successful self-dependence, the penalties of celebrity are beginning to attach to me. My books tell me Leeds, TWK, Scarborough, TWK, Harrogate,
TWK.
Too well known.
What books?
Oh, trust me or not as you like. I trust you implicitly. You shall see.
Buzzing comes back in a heap. Listen what he's ordered for his breakfast tomorrow. Omelette with herbs. Omelette with herbs. Put a piece of butter the size of your thumb into the frying pan. Look at my thumb. Look at yours. Whose size does she mean?
Upright, Mrs. Rag. Oh. It is my nature to be orderly. And so I am. I must have everything down in black and white. My commercial library. In appearance, complicated. In reality, simplicity itself. I merely avoid the errors of inferior practitioners. I never plead for myself, and I never apply to rich folk. Those with small means have generous impulses. The rich, never.
True.
Fourpence in Rothschild's pocket is safer than in that of the woman who is crying stale shrimps in Skeldgate at this very moment. Book one, district. Book two, cases I plead. Three, people who said yes or no to above pleadings. Four, adopted handwritings, false testimonials, and so on and so on and so on. My outgoings and incomings, wind and weather, fluctuations in my health or Mrs. Rag's head. So, my dear girl, the swindler's mill goes.
What must I do? I have no one to turn to.
If you remain in York, if you attempt to communicate with Mr. Huxtable, that spy will find you out. If, on the other hand, you leave the city, taking your departure by other means than the railway, of course, you defy him to find fresh trace of you. Thus, my brief abstract of your present position. What do you think?
It ends in nothing.
Pardon me. It ends in an arrangement for your safe departure and a plan for the entire gratification of your wishes in the direction of the stage. You have only to say, Captain Rag, take charge of me, and my plans are yours.
I will take tonight to consider.
Why not decide at once?
I have more... I have another object in view besides the one you know of.
May I ask?
No. Captain Rag, allow me to thank you for your hospitality and to wish you good night. I am worn out. I want rest.
Unpardonable on my part not to have thought of it before. We will resume our conversation tomorrow. Permit me to give you the candle. Mrs. Rag, assist Miss Vanstone, and the next time you forget yourself in your chair, fall asleep straight. Don't annoy me by dropping off crooked.
Is the captain breakfasting by candlelight and I haven't done the omelette? Oh!
There. You have the whole story. The result is I've sold my jewellery and dresses. If my want of experience keeps me back in a theatre, I can afford to wait till the stage can pay me.
There is not the least fear of that, my dear girl, if you profit by my assistance.
I must accept more than you have already offered, or none.
The other object. I am all attention.
I am interested in making certain inquiries. I cannot undertake them without exciting suspicion. Like you, Captain Rag, I need another.
Are they about a man? A woman?
An enemy.
Are you thoroughly clear in your own mind about what you want to know?
Where Michael Vanstone lives, his habits, the people he associates with, what he does with his money, whether there is any woman about this house, a relation, housekeeper, who has influence on him.
Harmless enough so far. What next?
Nothing. The rest is my secret.
Captain?
Take that omelette away, Mrs. Rag. Give it to the dogs.
If you want time to consider...
I don't need a moment. Place your departure from York, your dramatic career, and your private inquiries under my care. Here I am, unreservedly at your disposal. Say the word. Do you take me?
I do.
To work. Do these confidential investigations require immediate attention?
No. I wish to secure my freedom from all interference on the part of my friends first.
Very good. We beat our retreat from York tomorrow. Next, how came you to think of the theatre at all? I see the sacred fire burning in you. Tell me, who lit it?
Do it.
A sample is all I want. Of Julia or Lucy.
You shall. It just reminds me of a time...
Is there anything I can offer you? Burnt feathers, smelling salts?
Leave me for a moment. Page 49. You shall have Mrs. Malaprop and Lydia.
Bravo! Dash it in my beauty and it's done.
There, Sir Anthony, there sits the deliberate simpleton who wants to disgrace her family and lavish herself on a fellow not worth a shilling. Madam,
thought you once. You thought, miss? I don't know any business you have to think at all. Thought does not become a young woman.
Mr. Huxtable's opinion is true. You are a born actress. But you must be trained before you can do anything on the stage. I have trained others. I can train you.
You are a swindler and therefore an actor.
Don't trust my word. Trust my eye to my own interests. You shall pay me from your profits half your salary for the first year, third for the second, and half the sum you clear by your first benefit in the London Theatre. A month to 6 weeks' study. A quiet country place, secure from all interference. Trust my knowledge of Yorkshire and consider the place found. There's only one difficulty left.
Which?
The grand difficulty of humanity from the cradle to the grave. Money.
What is it wanted for?
Bills. Oh, pray understand, I never was and never shall be personally desirous of paying a single farthing to any born creature on the habitable globe. I am speaking in your interest, not mine.
How?
You can't get away from York tomorrow without the chaise, and I can't get the chaise without...
How much do you want?
£25.
There.
The nature of the matter, my dear girl. A transaction has taken place between us. I must have it down in black and white. Chronicle of Events, preserved in Captain Rags' dispatch box, October 1846. We are residing in the secluded village of Ruswarp, near Whitby. Mrs. Rag and Miss Vanstone preceded me here, and the next day I followed them alone with the luggage. On leaving the terminus, I had the satisfaction of seeing the lawyer's clerk in close confabulation with the detective officer whose advent I had prophesied. I left him in peaceable possession of the city of York. Miss Vanstone is an extraordinary mimic. She has the flexible face, the manageable voice, and the dramatic knack which fit a woman for character parts and disguises on stage. This experience of her reminded me of an old programme of sketches, monologues, and verses I had written for a fellow comedian as given by a woman. Now, I have a woman. So, train her in the art of dramatic disguise, provide appropriate dresses for different characters, develop her singing, give her plenty of smart talk addressed directly to the audience, astonish the public with a young lady at home, which depends from first to last on that young lady's sole exertions, commit the entire management of it to my care, and what follows? Fame for my fair relative, a fortune for myself.
I agree.
Very satisfactory, except in one particular. She will sign nothing. If it's in her interest, she agrees. When it isn't, she plainly threatens to leave at a week's notice. One comfort is, I have the cooking of the accounts, and my fair relative shall not fill her pockets too suddenly if I can help it. Chronicle for November. We are established at Derby, but the expenses of starting the entertainment are beyond the reach of any means we possess. I saw no other recourse left but to try one of the local music sellers, who is said to be a speculating man. Well, there is only one consolation. I'll cheat the music seller. December. The music seller has taken masterly advantage of our helplessness and imposed terms on us for performances at Derby and Nottingham with such a business-like disregard for all interest but his own that I cordially regret not having known him in early life. Miss Vanstone regularly reports herself to a certain Mr. Clare in Somersetshire, who is to forward all letters between herself and his son. Having suspected from the first there was a gentleman in the background, it is highly satisfactory to discover he recedes into the remote perspective of Asia. Long may he remain there. My gifted relative has made her first appearance in public and laid the foundations of our future fortunes. Her personal appearance settled the question before she opened her lips, eyes in a blaze, and made up to outblush her own rouge. She rushed full gallop through her changes of character, her songs and her dialogue, making mistakes by the dozen and never stopping to set them right, carrying people along with her in a perfect whirlwind and never waiting for the applause. The whole thing was over 20 minutes sooner than we had calculated on. She carried it through to the end and fainted on the waiting room sofa a minute after the curtain was down. I prompted a doctor with a neat speech from behind the curtain and never heard such applause. I felt the tribute. I felt it deeply. Needless to say, my first proceeding was to bowl out the music seller on the spot. I was supported by our gifted Magdalene.
I will personally engage myself to no man, and I only share profits with you while it suits me. Besides, I haven't employed the music seller to make my inquiries. I have you.
I don't like her steadily remembering those inquiries in the first bewilderment of her success. It looks infernally ill for the future. January 1847. She has shown her cloven foot already.
I propose we take our entertainment next week to Newark.
No. Pass the face cream, please.
Why, pray?
There will be a week's delay before I appear again.
But the results have
for
not...
For you to make your inquiries.
There is, of course, my dear, the question of expenses.
Take my share from Derby.
I wonder who first picked a mule as the type of obstinacy. How little that man must have known of women. My dear, one, Mr. Michael Vanston now resides at German Place, Brighton. He's likely to stay there. The air suits him. Can we go in? I'm frozen.
In a while.
Coombe Raven is sold. Two, since his arrival in London, he's invested with great judgment in property.
Go on.
Three, no intimate friends, though an Aberall Bartram is said to be under friendly obligation. The Aberall's nephew, George, is a cousin of Mr. Noel Vanston, who is in delicate health and lives with his father. Four, a housekeeper, a Mrs. LeConte, has been in Michael Vanston's service since his wife's death and has acquired a strong influence over both father and son.
Thank you. Which next place do we take by storm?
Sheffield.
February. It is the amiable defect of the English public never to know when they've had enough of a good thing. They continually try to encore one of Magdalene's characters, an old North Country lady modelled on her governess, Miss Garth. This particular performance fairly amazes people. I don't wonder at it. But in the very height of our prosperity, my perverse pupil sticks to her trumpery family quarrel. Twice, to my knowledge, she has written to Michael Vanston. Both letters have been returned unopened. She is not the girl to put up with such an insult. Mischief will come of it. Mischief to Michael Vanston, which is of no earthly consequence. Mischief to me, which is a truly serious matter. Chronicle for April and May. The ungrateful girl whose reputation I have made tells me...
For the present, the business connection between us is at an end. I need a rest. I have new objects in view. I might possibly want your help with them, and I might return to the entertainment. In either case, all we need is to exchange addresses. I shall leave on Monday.
Am I the sort of man to be treated this way by my very own pupil? Decidedly not. I am a man to see myself through a neat succession of alternatives. One, compliance. Exchange addresses and keep an eye on her. Two, be fatherly and threaten to tell her sister. Three, use the information I possess by making it a marketable commodity between Mr. Michael Vanstone and myself. At present, I incline towards the last course. I will suspend my chronicle of events until Monday.
Will you help me with my bag?
Miss Vanstone, before you leave...
Oh, I haven't the time.
Allow me to read from the obituary column. On the 29th inst at Brighton, Michael Vanstone, Esquire of Zurich, aged 77. I presume now, my dear, we go on with our performances.
No. With my inquiries. Into the dead man's son.
Mr. Noel Vanstone.
Yes.
That was episode 2 of No Name by Wilkie Collins, dramatized by Ray Jenkins. Magdalene Vanstone was played by Sophie Thompson, Captain Bragg by Jack May, Mrs. Ragg by Vivian Pickles, Nora Vanstone by Elizabeth Mansfield, and Miss Garth by Kathleen Helm. Peter Woodthorpe was Mr. Clare, Paul Downing, Frank Clare, John Moffat, Mr. Pendrell, John Bull, Bulmer, and the narrator was Philip Sully. The music was by Peter Brewis and was played by Maurice Cambridge. The director was Janet Whittaker.